Chapter 16. A Turning Tide. A wing of fighters bolted overhead, their engines leaving smoke smears across the darkening sky. In pursuit, alien craft rattled after them, tracer rounds spitting across the clouds in futility as they tried to hunt the Imperial fighters back to one of the city's few remaining airstrips. Beneath the aerial chase, Hell's Reach burned. Avenue by avenue, alley by alley, the invaders flooded through the docks district, gaining ground with the death of every defender. Where the fighting was fiercest, Vox contact was a broken, unreliable mess of lucky signals breaking through the interference. The Imperials fell back through the night, sector by sector, leaving thoroughfares packed with their dead. The city added new scents to its reek of sulfur and salt water. Now, Hell's Reach had come to smell of blood and flame, of 100,000 lives ending in fire between a single sunrise and sunset. Poets from the impious ages of old terror had written of a punitive afterlife, a hell beneath the world's surface. Had that realm ever existed, it would have smelled like this industrial city, dying in fire on the shores of Armageddon Secundus. In unconnected catacombs below the ground, the citizens of Hell's Reach remained shielded from the slaughter above. They clustered together in the darkness, listening to the erratic drumbeat of factories, workshops, tanks, and munitions stores exploding. Although the walls of the subterranean shelters shook with tremors that bled down through the ground, the booms and thumps on the surface echoed down like peals of thunder. Many parents told their young children that it was just a violent storm above. Across the embattled world, the besieged cities were visible from orbit as blackened patches scarring the planet's surface. As the planetary assault entered its second month, Armageddon's atmosphere was turning thick and sour with smoke from the burning hives. Hell's Reach itself no longer resembled a city. With the docks under siege, the last pristine sectors of the hive were aflame, wreathing the city in a black pall born of burning oil refineries. The hive's spine, Hell's Highway, was a wounded serpent winding through the city. Its skin was mottled with patches of light and dark, pale and grey where the fighting had ceased, leaving graveyards of silent tanks and blackened where conflict still raged, pitting the armored fist of the Steel Legion against the junk tanks of the invading beasts. The city walls were half-fallen, resembling some archaeological ruin. Half of the hive was surrendered, abandoned to defeat's lifeless silence. The other half, held by Imperial forces that diminished by the hour, burned in battle. And so dawned the 37th day.
Hey! No sleep for you!
Andre kicked at McHernes's shin, jolting the dockmaster back to the waking world.
We must move soon, I am thinking. No time for sleeping.
Tomas blinked the stickiness of exhaustion from his eyes. He'd not even realized he'd fallen asleep. The two of them were crouched behind a stack of crates in a warehouse with the remaining 9 men of McHernes's dock gang. He met their faces now, each in turn, barely recognizing any of them. A day of war had aged them all, gifting them with sunken eyes and soot-blackened skin that brought out the lines in their middle-aged faces.
Where are we going?
McHernes whispered back. The stormtrooper had removed his goggles to wipe his own aching eyes. They'd not slept. They'd barely even stopped fighting in over 20 hours.
My captain wishes us to move west. There are civilian shelters above ground there.
One of the men hawked and spat on the ground. His eyes were red-rimmed and bloodshot. Andre didn't think any less of him for the fact he'd been weeping.
West?
The man asked.
West, Andre said again. That is my captain's order, and that is what we will do.
But the beasts are already there. We saw them. I did not say the order was what I wished to do with my retirement years. I said it was an order, and obeying orders is what we are going to do.
But
If the aliens are already there...
Another worker piped up, snapping Andre's patience.
Then we will be behind enemy lines and see many dead civilians we were too late to save. Throne, you think I have good answers for you all? I do not. I have no good answers, not for you, not for anyone else. But my captain has ordered us to go there, and go there we most certainly shall, yes? Yes.
It did the trick. A ghost of focus returned to their slack, weary gazes.
Let's do it, then,
McHernus said, his knees clicking as he rose up. He was amazed he could still stand.
Blood of the Emperor, I've never ached like this.
Why are you complaining, I wonder?
The stormtrooper refastened his goggles with a grin.
You worked insane shifts on these docks. This is surely no more tiring, I think.
Yeah,
one of the others grunted.
But we were getting paid then.
With muted laughter, the team moved back out onto the docks. Colonel Saren's injured arm was securely fastened in a makeshift sling. What annoyed him most was the loss of his right arm to gesture with to the hololithic display, but then that was the price to pay for foolishly leaving the grey warrior in hostile territory. Shrapnel in the arm was a lucky break, all things considered. The enemy sniper team had killed four of his Baneblade's command crew as they surfaced from the bowels of their tank for much-needed fresh air after countless hours breathing the rank, recycled fumes of the internal filtration scrubbers. Another sector cleared, only to be wormed through again by bestial scavengers mere hours later. In the low-ceilinged confines of the tank's principal command chamber, Saren sat on his well-worn throne, letting the tension ebb from him and trying to forget the column of pain that had been a perfectly normal arm only an hour before. The sawbones, Jerth, had already recommended amputation, citing the risk of infection from dirty shrapnel and the likelihood the limb would never return to, as he put it, full functionality. Bloody surgeons. Always so keen to graft on some cheap, jury-rigged bionic that would click every time he moved a muscle and seize up because of low-grade components. Saren was no stranger to augmetics in the Guard, and they were a far cry from the modifications afforded to the rich and decadent. He stared at the hololithic table now, watching the docks recede from Imperial control with agonizing, desperate slowness. Seeing the flickering regiment runes and location sigils, it was hard to translate the skeletal vision to the fierce fighting that was truly taking place. More and more steel Legion infantry units were reaching the docks, but it was like holding the sea back with a bucket. The guardsmen being sent in did little but bolster the general retreat. Reclaiming ground was a distant fiction.
"Sir,"
the Vox officer called out. Saren looked over to him, drawn from his reverie, not realizing the man had been trying to get his attention for almost a minute.
Yes.
Word from orbit. The Imperial fleet is re-engaging again.
Saren made the sign of the Aquila. At least he tried to, and ended with a grunt of pain, as his bound arm flared up in pained protest. One-handed, he made a single wing of the Imperial Eagle instead.
Acknowledged. May the Emperor be with them all.
This scarce acknowledgement made, he lapsed back into watching the deployment of his forces throughout the city. Around him, the tank's crew worked at their stations. So, the Imperial fleet was re-engaging. Again. Every few days, the same story played out. The joint Astartes and naval fleet would break from the warp close to the planet and hurl themselves at the orc vessels ringing the embattled world. The engagement would hold for several hours as both sides inflicted horrendous losses on the other, but the Imperials would inevitably be hurled back into a fighting retreat by the immense opposition. Once they'd fallen back to the safety of a nearby system, they'd regroup over time, under the command of Admiral Parol and High Marshal Helbrecht, and make ready for another assault. It was blunt and crudely effective. In a void war of such magnitude, there was little place for finesse. Saren wasn't blind to the tactics at play. Lance strikes into the heart of the enemy fleet, bleed them for all that was possible before a retreat back to safety. It was a necessary grind, a war of attrition. It was also hardly inspiring. The Hive cities were on the edge now. Without reinforcements in the coming weeks, many would fall outright. The infrequent transmissions from Tartarus, Infernus, and Acheron were all increasingly grim, as were Saren's reports of Hell's Reach to them. If there was no... Sir! Saren glanced to his left, to where the Vox officer sat at his station. The man held his headphone receivers to his ear with one hand. He looked pale.
Emergency signal from the Serpentine in orbit. She requests immediate cessation of all anti-air weaponry in the docks district.
Saren sat forward in his chair. There was barely any anti-air firepower left in the docks district, but that wasn't the point.
What did you say? The Serpentine. Astartes strike cruiser, sir. She requests... Throne, send the order. Send the order! Deactivate all remaining anti-air turrets in the docks district.
Around him, the tank's crew was silent, waiting, watching. Saren breathed a single word, almost fearful giving voice to it would shatter the possibility it was true.
Reinforcements.
One ship. The Serpentine. Sea green and charcoal black, it dived like a dragon of myth through the enemy fleet, while the rest of the Imperial warships hammered into the orcish invaders, breaking against the ring of alien cruisers surrounding the planet. One ship broke through, running a gauntlet of enemy fire, its shields crackling into lifelessness and its hull aflame. The Serpentine hadn't come to fight. As the Astartes vessel tore through the upper atmosphere, drop pods and thunderhawks rained from its iron-clad belly, streaming down to the world below. Its duty complete, the Serpentine powered its way back into the fight. Its captain gritted his teeth against a screed of damage reports signalling the death of his beloved ship. But there was no shame in dying with such a vital duty done. He had acted under the orders of the highest authority. A warrior on the surface below, whose deeds were already inscribed in 100 annals of imperial glory. That warrior had demanded this risk be taken, and that reinforcements be hurled down to Armageddon no matter the odds facing them. His name was Tushan, Lord of the Fireborn, and the Serpentine did his will. The Serpentine's end never came. A black shape eclipsed the fat-hulled orcish destroyers cutting the Astartes vessel to pieces. Another ship, a far greater ship, pounded the alien attackers into wreckage with overwhelming broadside fire, buying the Serpentine the precious moments it needed to escape the gauntlet it had run a second time. As they broke clear, the Serpentine's captain breathed out a prayer and signalled across the bridge to the Master of Communications.
"Send word to the Eternal Crusader," he said. "Give them the sincerest thanks of our chapter."
The response from the Eternal Crusader came back almost immediately. The grim voice of High Marshal Helbrecht echoed across the Serpentine's bridge.
"It is the Black Templars that thank you, Salamander."
The beasts have cracked open another of the above-ground civilian shelters. Like blood spilling from a wound, humans flood into the streets through the destroyed wall. When the choices are to die cowering or die fleeing to a safety that may not even exist, any human can be forgiven for giving in to panic. I tell myself this as I watch them dying, and do all I can not to judge them, to hold them to the exalted standards of honor I would demand of my brothers. They're just human. My disgust is unfair, unwarranted, and yet it remains. As they die, families and souls of all ages, they squeal like butchered swine. This war is poisonous. Trapped here, locked away from my chapter, my mind echoes with bleak prejudices. It is becoming hard to accept that I must die for these people to live. "Attack!" I tell my brothers, my voice barely carrying over the ranting of the engine. Together,
We run from the moving rhino transport, smashing into the enemy's rearguard. My Crozius rises and falls, as it has risen and fallen 10,000 times in the last month. The adamantium eagle chimes as it cuts through the air. It flares with unleashed energy as its power field connects with flesh and armor. The brazier orb, built into the weapon's pommel, breathes sacred incense in a gray mist, like coils of smoke weaving between us all, friend and foe. The weariness ebbs, the grudges fade. Hatred is the greatest purifier, the truest emotion, overriding all others. Blood, stinking and inhuman, rains across my armor in discolored spurts. As it marks the black cross I wear on my chest, my revulsion flares anew. Crunch! The Crozius Maul ends another alien's life. Crunch! Another. My mentor, the great Mordred the Black, wielded this weapon in battle against mankind's foes for almost 4 centuries. It sickens me to know it may never be recovered from Hell's Reach, nor our armor, nor our gene seed. What legacy will we leave once the last of us falls to the filthy blades of these beasts? One of them roars into my face, spattering my visor with his unclean saliva. Less than a second later, my Crozius annihilates his features, silencing whatever pathetic alien challenge I was supposed to be answering. My secondary heart has joined the primary. I feel them thudding in concert, but not in unison. My human heart pounds like a tribal drum, fast and hot. Twin to it, in my chest, my gene-grown heart supports it in a slow, heavy thud. They swarm over each other in their mindless fervor to claw at us. Fistfuls of scrap metal that have no right to function as weapons cough solid rounds that clang off our armor. Each shot tears more of the black paint from our warplate, but sheds none of Dawn's holy blood. At last they recognize the threat we represent. The aliens abandon their wanton slaughter of the fleeing civilians that still spill from the shell-broken wall. The mob of beasts flooding the street has turned to more tempting prey. Us. Our banner falls. Artarian's cry of pain carries across the close-range vox as a roar of distortion, but I hear his voice beneath the interference. Priamus is with him before the rest of us can react. Throne he can fight. His blade lunges and cuts, every gesture a killing blow. Get up! He snarls at Artarian without even looking. I crash the faceplate of my helm into the barking maw of the alien before me, shattering his jaw and the rows of shark-like teeth. As he falls back, my Crozius crunches into his throat, hammering his wrecked corpse to the ground. The banner rises again. Though Artarian favors his left leg, the right is mauled, his thigh punctured by an alien spear. Curse the fact these beasts have the strength to violate Astarte's warplate. Another vox-distorted growl signifies Artarian has pulled the lance free from his leg. I have no time to witness his recovery. More beasts shriek before me, a thrashing wall of sick jade flesh. We're losing this road, Bastilan grunts, his signal marred by the sound of weapons crashing against his armor. We are but 6 against a legion. 5. Nerevar's voice is strained as he fights with his chainblade two-handed, hewing down the beasts with none of Priamus's artistry, but no less fury. Cador is dead. Forgive me, brother. Bastilan's voice breaks off as he fires a stream of bolter shells at point-blank range. A moment's lack of focus. Ahead are targets. 3 junkyard tanks that have long since ceased to resemble their original Imperial Guard hulls continue shelling the shelter block. These have none of the security offered by the subterranean shelters, for they are not civilian evacuation shelters at all. Each of these squat domes houses 1,000 at capacity, designed to resist violent sandstorms and the tropical cyclones all too common on the equatorial coast. Not sustained shelling from enemy armor. They are used now because there is nothing else to use, with the city grown far beyond its capacity to shelter all its citizens beneath the ground. The beasts know us well. They seek to draw the city's forces into the most fevered fighting. So they hurl themselves at our defenseless civilians with sick cunning, knowing we will do all we can to defend these sites above any others. How easy it is to despise them. Nerevar voxes, his voice wet and ruined by pain. I vault the falling corpse of the alien closest to me and stand by his side, maul swinging with relentless motion, as our apothecary struggles to rise again. He fails. The beasts have brought him to his knees.
Not coming out, he coughs.
His hands clutch weakly at the axe hammered into his stomach. His gauntlets stroke without strength along the haft, gaining no grip. Blood from the sunder in his armor is painting his tabard scarlet.
Can't do it!
In the name of the Emperor! My chastisement comes forth as no more than a low growl. Stand and fight, or we all die. With Nerevar wounded and prone, he becomes a lodestone for the creatures desperate to deliver the death blow to one of the Emperor's knights. They bellow and charge. My Crozius kills one. A kick to the sternum sends another staggering back long enough for me to bring the maul down on his head. A third is claimed by plasma fire, tumbling back as a blur of white-hot flame. Stinging ash, all that remains of the wretched alien, blasts back into the eyes of its bestial comrades. Too many. Even for us, this is too many. I have a momentary glimpse of human families fleeing in all directions down the burning streets, able to escape while the horde focuses its fury on us. Several of the civilians are cut down by sponson fire from the junk tanks, but many more survive, even if only to run blind into the unsafe labyrinth of their dying city. Before this war, I would never have counted such a thing to be a victory. With a cry that mixes anger and pain, Nero tears the axe blade from his abdomen. Any relief I feel is swallowed, for he has no time to rise before the beasts are on us.
I see some knights,
Andre said. This announcement was followed by a whispered,
"Damn it!"
and the humming of his hellgun powering up again. The work gang kept their backs to the rooftop's low wall, with only Andre peering over the edge to look down into the street.
"Everybody load rifles and be very ready."
"How many?" McHernus asked.
"How many knights?" "Four. No, five. One is injured. I also see 30 of the enemy and 3 tanks that were once our Lehman Russes. Now, no more talking. Everybody take aim."
The dock workers did as ordered, drawing beads on the melee unfolding below.
"Aim low,"
McHernus told his men, drawing a silent smile from Andre.
"Aim for legs and torsos."
No one needed to be told to be careful with their fire and not hit the Templars. The stormtrooper fired first, his bright lance of laser the signal for the others to join in. Lasguns bucked in increasingly sure hands, focusing lenses burning as they spat their lethal energy into the street below. The tearing laser fire punched into shoulders, legs, backs and arms, and the Imperials had managed 3 volleys before the beasts ripped their hungry attention from the knights and returned fire up at the men crouching on the warehouse rooftop.
"Down!"
Andre ordered the others. They obeyed, sinking back into cover. The stormtrooper hunched lower, but remained where he was. He risked another shot and another, splitting 2 aliens through the skull with pinpoint fire. Around him, around them all, the low wall edging the roof was shredding under the surviving aliens' fire, but it didn't matter. The knights were free. Andre crouched at last, after seeing the figure of one Templar, the knight's armor more gunmetal grey than black now from battle damage, hurl aside 3 attackers and lay waste to them with his monstrous, crackling relic hammer. His last act before falling back was to untrap his last debt pack and set the timer for 6 seconds. With a roar of effort, Andre hurled it down the street towards the tanks. It exploded a half second after clanging against the lead tank's turret, decapitating the war machine in a burst of noise and fire. The Templars could deal with the other 2.
Back!
The stormtrooper was laughing.
Back across the roof!
What the hell's so funny?
One of the dock workers, Jassel, was complaining as they ran in crouches away from the disintegrating roof edge.
They weren't just knights.
Andre's voice was coloured by a sincere grin.
That was the Reclusiac we just saved. Now, quick, quick, down to the street again.
In the calm that followed, the streets gave birth to an atmosphere that was somewhere between serene and funereal. A very different warrior greeted Magherneus this time. The towering figure was far from the regal, impassive statue that merely acknowledged his existence with a nod. The Reclusiarch's armor still set his teeth on edge, its active hum making his eyes water if he stood too close. But Magherneus knew machines, even if he didn't know ancient artifacts of war, and he could hear the faults in the warplate now. Its once smooth, angry purr had a waspish edge to its tone now, and intermittent clicks told of something internal no longer running at full function. The joints of the battered armor no longer snarled with tensing fiber cable muscles. They growled, as if reluctant to move. 5 weeks. 5 weeks of fighting night and day in the same suit of armor, with the dock assault rising as the most punishing week yet. It was a miracle the armor still functioned at all. The tabard was ripped and stained grey-green with alien blood. The scrolls that had adorned the warrior's shoulders were gone, with only snapped chains showing they were ever held there at all. The armor itself was still impressive in its violent potential and faceless inhumanity, but where it had been blacker than black before the war, most of the blackness remaining was from scorch marks and laser burns, marking the armor like bruises and claw wounds. Much of the warplate was revealed in a dull, unpolished grey, now that the paint was lost to 1,000 weapon chops and glancing gunshots. Somehow, it had the inelegant presence of a rifle or tank churned out of an Armageddon factory. Plain, simple, but utterly brutal. The other Templars looked no better. The one who bore the Reclusiarch's standard now bore battle damage akin to his leader. The banner itself was a ragged ruin, little more than scraps hanging from the pole. The one with the white helm was barely able to stand, supported by two of the others. The voice that rasped from his mouth grill was a wordless, hacking cough. And rather than humanize them, rather than reveal the warriors beneath the trappings and the knightly war gear, this damage instead stole what little personality had ever been in evidence to humanize. How could any men, even one shaped by genetic forges on a distant world, withstand so much punishment and survive? How could they stand before others of their own species and seem so utterly unlike them?
"Hello, Reclusiarch," said Andre.
He carried his Hellgun, uncharged now, resting on his shoulder. He thought this made him look rakish and casual, and he was right. He looked that way to the dock workers, at least. Grimaldus's voice didn't growl or boom. It intoned, a low and bleak and grim drawl. It was all too easy to imagine this man back aboard a great Gothic warship, speaking a sermon to his brothers in the endless cold of void travel.
"You have the thanks of the Black Templars, Stormtrooper. And you, dock workers of Hell's Reach."
"It was good timing, I think,"
Andre continued, a vague nod and the same smile showing he thought nothing of conversations with badly wounded, towering, inhuman warriors surrounded by slaughtered aliens.
"But the docks, they are not looking good. I am hearing no orders anymore. So I see you, noble sirs, and I am wondering, perhaps they can give me orders."
There was a pause, but not a silent one. The city was never silent, offering up a background chorus of gunfire rattles and the crump of distant explosions.
"All units are called to the shelter blocks. Guard, militia, Astartes, all.
Even without my captain's voice, we have followed that path. But there is more, sir.
Speak.
Grimaldus looked away now, the silver skull that served as his face glaring in the direction of a burning commerce district several streets away.
One of your knights fell at the docks. We have hidden his body from the enemy jackals. The etchings on his armor named him as Anastus.
The white-helmed Astartes spoke, his voice emerging like a man speaking through a mouthful of gruel.
Anastus died as we deployed last night. Life signs faded fast. Warrior's death.
Grimaldus nodded, his attention restored to the humans.
What is your name? The Reclusiarch asked the stormtrooper.
Trooper André, 703rd Steel Legion Stormtrooper Division, sir.
And yours?
He asked the next man in line, taking every name until the last, whom he recognized without needing to ask.
Dockmaster Thomas McHernus, the knight grunted finally. It is good to see you on the field. Courage such as yours belongs at the vanguard.
McHernus's skin crawled, not with distaste, but raw awkwardness. How does one reply to such a thing? To say he was honored? To admit that every muscle in his body ached and he regretted ever volunteering for this madness?
Thank you, Reclusiarch, he managed.
I will remember your names and deeds this day. All of you. Hell's Reach may burn, but this war is not lost. Every one of your names will be etched into the black stone pillars of the Valiant Hall aboard the Eternal Crusader.
André nodded.
I am very honored, Reclusiarch, as are these handsome and fine gentlemen with me. But if you could tell my captain about this, I would be even happier.
The harsh sound emitted from the Reclusiarch's vox speakers was somewhere between a bark and a snarl. It took Magherna several moments to realize it had been a laugh.
It will be done, Trooper André. You have my word.
I am hopeful this will also impress the lady I intend to marry.
Grimaldus wasn't sure how to reply to that. He settled for...
Yes. Good.
Such optimism. But yes, I must find her first. Where do we move now, sir?
West. The shelters in Sulphur Commercia. The alien dogs are taunting us.
The Reclusiarch gestured with his massive hammer, the weapon's power field deactivated for now. Between warehouses and manufactories, distant domes were aflame.
See them? Already they burn.
Priamus didn't look where the others did. His attention was lifted higher, to the smoke-thick skies.
What's that?
He gestured skyward, to a ball of flame trailing down.
It can't be what it looks like.
It is, Grimaldus replied,
unable to look away from the sight.
Ah, yeah!
André cheered as several similar objects appeared, blazing earthward, leading fiery contrails like comets.
What are they?
Asked McHernus, caught off guard by the stormtroopers' capering and the knight's reverence.
Drop pods, said the Reclusiarch.
His silver skull turned amber with the reflection of the burning tank hulls nearby.
Astartes drop pods,